Okay, here we are. Who are you and why are you here?
Hello, my name's Adam Sklar, and I'm here to talk about my bikes.
Excellent. We love talking about your bikes.
Great. Same.
Okay, so I wanted to talk to you about your work that you've been doing, putting together production bikes and having them built to your spec and imported, and you handling what you handle with them, and what it has been like for you from as a designer and as an engineer getting all that stuff done.
Okay, I'll give you all my secrets.
Yes, please.
I guess overall it's been a very positive experience. Coming from an engineering and design background, one thing about custom bikes is every custom bike, because it's the nature being because it's bespoke, you know, you're like, oh, this dropout will work for this person, this tube will work for this person. You're kind of piecing together a bike one at a time. You're making it work, which I think is part of the beautiful thing about those bikes. But it's not a designed product. It's kind of a cobbled together thing with stuff that's available. And sometimes you make things even for those bikes that are special. But the coolest part about doing the production stuff is you're sending off hundreds of these bikes. So everything's from the ground up. It's a fully thought through product that works for a lot of people. It's not just, this will get it done for now. You know, you have, because you're doing it in volume, you can make your own stuff. And
you can solve bigger challenges in a way.
Yeah, you can solve bigger challenges, and you're making a more thought out product, I think. It's because it has to serve more people, and there's going to be more of them out there. So you get to, there's a lot of things like with the custom bikes where you'd be like, well, it's expensive to make these head tubes or this dropout or get this tubing drawn or formed. So you make do with other stuff. Yeah, and so for the production stuff, it's cool to be like, what's the bike I want to make that's going to serve people well?
Right. Yeah, that's it's got to be liberating to be able to do that. I mean, I try to take advantage of things in my way that way to do that too.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like taking all the things I've learned from designing hundreds of bikes. And when I say it, it sounds like marketing-y speak, but it's really not. It's super cool to be able to take everything I learned from designing all those hundreds of bikes and then design a really sweet production bike.
Well, I mean, if you sort of were had different shoes on, like if you were some kid getting a job at Specialized and you had to draw up a bike, though lots of times those people have never drawn up a bike or never built a bike, and they're making a bike that's going to go to production, and that's really the first bike they've ever truly done, and you're actually truly informed on a deep level. And you're doing that, and I think few people understand just how inexperienced a lot of the people at big companies are, and how much experience a guy like yourself gains.
Yeah, I think I didn't even understand that until I had done it. I mean, I think I took for granted what that experience was, and also talking to the custom bike design process is super involved. You know, most of the time it's 6 weeks of working with someone and getting fully, like, intimately involved with what they want out of a bike. And that's the kind of, you know, when you take, like, business classes and stuff, they always talk about market research and, like, go out on the street and ask people what they want. And I was able to do that, you know, for 8 years, building bikes full-time, talking to people about what do you want out of a bike.
Of the most passionate and eager people, too.
Yeah, usually. Yeah, and, yeah, I learned a lot about how people talk about bikes. Like, you know, there's lots of things they'll say that mean one, they sound like one thing, but they mean another thing.
You have to decipher as a frame builder or a frame designer.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, I thought a lot about that, the difference between being like a bike engineer and a designer, right? Like the, you know, for engineering, we're designing towards like really measurable metrics. For the design, that's the fun part where someone's like, I want a bike that rides, you know, however, like, I don't know, some,
it gives me whimsy.
So exactly, yeah, and like how you design that whimsy, the fun into it.
Sure.
I think that's the cool, to bridge the engineering stuff and the design stuff to make a bike that, yeah, performs really well, but also is fun. Because that's sort of, I'm not making race bikes or performance, they're like performance recreation, as we call it. A really nice bike that's designed for someone who just wants to go ride their bike.
Go on a bike ride.
Yeah, go on a bike ride, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously you have, I mean, you say about how involved the custom is, but I mean, I would think that the production stuff is far more involved just on one bike. And then once you're done with that, it just continues to get made. But that initial investment in the engineering and design time is far greater than any single custom. But like, let's say from a documentation point of view, you had to deliver to your supplier clear and specific communication as to what you wanted. How describe to us, as you know, I like this type of content.
Yeah.
What that felt like, especially having, you know, you're dealing with the hand-built bike crowd here, but these are Asian bicycle production people, and we've seen Asian production prints, and they're very different from small builder prints. And you're having to communicate what you want so that you get exactly what you want with them. Now, you can speak to that, whereas a lot of people here can't, having gone through that process. And that's what I'd like to hear about.
Okay. Yeah, I think having an engineering background is really helpful for it, knowing how to deliver prints, like not just a bike CAD drawing, like an actual engineering drawing is helpful. You totally don't need it. I think a lot of people would be surprised how incredibly easy it is to get a bike made in Taiwan.
But they know their customer.
They do, and you could totally send them a napkin drawing and be like, or a spreadsheet with the geometry you want. And I think that's what a lot of brands are doing, you know. They're like, here, make me this bike. And they'll come back and they'll be like, here's the dropouts we chose, here's the tubing we chose. So,
I know you and I know what you're trying to do here. You don't want something that's accidental. You want what you want.
Right, so I don't do that at all. But there are brands out there that do that, and that's one way to do it. I mean, for me, so I'm drawing every tube. I'm drawing the butting profile. I'm speccing, you know, don't spec like specific heat treating, but there's some things that we go back and forth on, like they're experts as well. But like I drew, so yeah, I mean, I don't send a complete CAD package. I draw the tubes, the tubing, all the dropouts, spec certain tubes. You're like, just make it this butting profile. You know, it's not in engineering school, they'll convince you that you need to send like the whole. And when I did do like product design stuff, I was doing complex like molded plastic parts, and we would send the whole bill of materials and everything, you know, like incredibly spec'd out. I feel like the bike industry is a little bit looser than that. But knowing how that stuff works has been really helpful, because sometimes you can get lazy and then you run into issues, and it's nice to be able to be like, actually, this is exactly what I want. And then you go send that drawing over. Yeah, they're pretty easy to work with, you know. They're building bikes all day. They're building more bikes than anyone this whole room combined, like times a million. I mean, so many bikes.
Are you working with a Taiwanese company?
Yeah, my stuff's all Taiwan.
Yeah.
The Super Something. This one's Maxway, which is makes, you know, they started doing Surly, Salsa, All City. They do so many bikes.
What's the coolest thing you've learned working with them?
I think the coolest thing is how everything's made in like the same places, really. All the like reputable brands that make nice stuff are made in the same factories. There's a lot of factories, but there's only like four or five that make the really nice stuff. I guess I've learned it's been cool to go through some of the testing stuff. To see.
And do they do all the testing for you?
They do testing over there to like the ISO standards. And they'll send videos of the test. They send you like a spreadsheet with all the information on it, and then they also will send, everything gets tested to failure, and it's pretty cool to see how stuff fails. You know, I've done some.
It's like the best crash video.
It is, and it's so cool to. It's cool because in engineering school you do all these samples where you'll like take a piece of metal and pull it apart and see how it fails, and it's fun to see that in the context of a bicycle, which I've never had any frame failures from customers riding them, and I've done destructive testing on stuff, but never like, you know, the equipment it takes to do a fatigue test is pretty serious.
Yeah.
And they have stuff over there, and it costs like a couple $100 to get a frame tested, so you might as well do it.
Sure.
And it's just super interesting to see how stuff breaks.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like when I was at Fat City back in the early 90s, late 80s, you know, the Yo Eddie fork was being developed, and those went through a lot of destructive testing to figure out just how to make them safer and what really needed to be added to them. And it's one of those things where you ship out like a dozen forks that are going to be disposed of, but you have to build them just the way you're going to build them because that's what you're testing. And testing's a tough thing, especially when you're at the margins. But at those levels, you have to cover your ass and everything. But now you're tested, and you can bet on it.
Yeah, and that's another part of it, feeling like more of a complete product. You know, it's more thoroughly designed. Yeah, so I guess to your original question, yeah, it takes about a year to get a bike going there. So really, it's to start off, you know, you're like, I'm going to make a gravel bike, and like, I'll send over geometry drawings to kind of get a basic idea. And then it's similar to how I design a custom bike. Like, you're going through, you know, the hard part stuff is the hard parts first. Like we opened tooling to cast dropouts, so that takes the longest time to make that tooling. So we'll...
What did it cost you for the tools on that?
It's about $3,000.
That's not bad.
It's really cheap there.
But then, how much does one run cost? Like, is it one of those things like anodizing, where it's like opening up the run is the expensive part, and then, you know, each individual one doesn't cost you much at all. So it's like, if you're gonna, it's like a table fee for water jet. It's like putting it on the table costs money. Yeah. Cutting it out isn't the most expensive part.
No, yeah, I mean, a dropout's like $3 a set after you open the tooling. So there, which is something we just can't do here. It's,
right.
And that's a big reason I went to Taiwan, is because I was building bikes for the, you know, this is my living, and like, if I can't make enough money to live, I'm just gonna get a different job. So that's where my prices are based for the handmade stuff. It's like, this is how much money I need to make. But it was also a little soul crushing to all my friends being like, I want to get a bike from you someday, and I would say, that's not how I'd recommend spending your money, because it's, they're beautiful, wonderful things, but unless you're really making good money, I don't think it's a good use of your money. So I'm making bikes that my friends could afford, that I could afford, and by doing it in Taiwan, you're getting high quality, and you're just, they have the scale there that you can make a bike affordable.
I mean, this comes down to goals, and it's like, what are your goals? I mean, we open this up with, like, you know, you want to make bikes that people go on bike rides with, that have a good day with. Like, when they're hanging out with their friends, these are the good times.
Yeah.
And, you know, where in that does it say you have to make starvation wages for 20 years or 30 years or whatever, die angry or whatever? You know, it's like, and we're here in America. I mean, all your friends from college that went and got jobs, are they making things in America? No. You know, all that sort of stuff. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of opinions here at this show. And I mean, you're in the front lines of that right now. You're the point man. But it's like, are you wrong for thinking clearly? Are you wrong for thinking like a proper businessman? Are you wrong for wanting to deliver value to customers? It's like, you know, these are basic concepts in business. But for some reason, a lot of people get really fucking bent out of shape around here.
Yeah. I mean, do they? I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah. No, people say mean things.
Oh, nice.
But, I mean, you're talking to PVD. People say mean things to me all the time.
I mean, it's easy to get wrapped up in the scene, and I think I'm friends with most of the people here. But at the end of the day, it's like, this is my business, and I'm just going to run it how I want to run it. And
right.
Yeah, to my goals are to provide people fun bikes, and there's no way to do that if they're handmade. It's just not a, for that reason, it's a bad product because it's not accessible.
What was this? I drove here in a car that wasn't a bespoke handmade thing. I'm sure they used as many robots as they possibly could in a foreign country to make it. And granted, it might have been a German country, but, you know, but the thing is, like, they were using robots. They were using mass manufacturing techniques and everything like that. And it's like, we do that all the time in our lives. And, but anyway, it's just, I think there's a lot of underpinnings that go on here when it comes to not doing it yourself or using Asian production. It's a real energy that happens. But also, it's like, I'm on your side. I mean, it's like, I think it's cool. I think you're doing the correct thing. And I want to learn more about it. Like, what's been the hardest thing you've had to deal with while going through this whole process?
The hardest thing is the cash flow. I think it's just business stuff. Designing a...
Like, what did it cost you, like, 80 grand to get a run done and shipped and arrived and all that stuff?
Yeah, it's 95 run of bikes is 80 to 100 grand for run of bikes.
So you had to pull that money out of your ass and give it to them, and maybe you borrowed money so that you're bridging that and everything like that. But you got to make sales now, and it's like you got to sell all those units. And are you feeling like you're a salesman of a different type now?
A little bit, but I think that's been the business of frame building is different than frame building or making bikes, and it's been, for a few years, my whole thing has been, the only thing that really frustrates me here is that making bikes is by far, like, not even, it's the easiest part of the whole entire thing. Building bikes is super easy. Designing bikes, incredibly easy. That's why so many people are into it. There's so many constraints. It's a super easy design thing. They've been made almost the same way for 150 years. No one here is doing anything new or exciting. Not to belittle it, but, like, it's super fun, and I nerd out on it, too, but...
You're not launching a web telescope.
Yeah, we're making bikes, and... That's super fun. I think it's an amazing hobby, and I'm glad so many people do it as a hobby. But if we're going to do it as business, I'll either pay myself what I want or I'll go get a job, and I'm happy to do that. But so I'm just, all these decisions are business decisions. I'm just trying to, you know, pay myself.
Sounds like you went to too many Carl Strong lectures.
Carl knows what's up.
Yeah, you know, Carl's one of the smartest guys here.
Yeah. And it's fun, and it's, I don't know, it's like, I'm not, I don't think that comes from a place of being jaded. It's just realistic. It's like, this is super fun. Also, other stuff is super fun. Having a job is nice.
Being able to pay for a house and health insurance is fun.
Super fun. That's the funnest. Yeah. So it all comes down to lifestyle. Like, I love the lifestyle of working in the bike industry. So I have a brand that people know, and I should monetize that.
Okay. So this bike next to us, the Super Something, this is your first run?
This is the first production frame, yeah, the Super Something frame set.
It looks great.
Thank you.
What are you looking to do next with this? Like, say, what do you got, 100 bikes to sell?
The first 250 are out there. We have another 200 that'll be here next week. So this one has been, yeah, the reception's been awesome. People, like, literally the only feedback we've gotten is people loving it, which is so cool.
Well, I mean, I think you have your finger on the pulse of what a lot of people in the marketplace want, which, of course, is a great thing, yeah. You know? And it's like, if you're selling what they want and you've got it and you're priced well and it looks wonderful and it looks like a Sklar and all that stuff, it's like you're doing good there. But what are you going to do next in terms of a model? Like, because now that tooling and everything is done for this, you just pick up the phone and you've got another 250 coming, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And but okay, so that's selling them. But then you're going to be like, oh, I want to. What about the next one? What are you going to do?
Oh, well, it's right behind you. It's this is the prototype for our next model, which is a mountain bike.
It looks like a mountain bike, yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard 29er hardtail built. This one has a 164 because it's a size large, so we're going to do four sizes.
That's crazy, a 164 on a hardtail?
That's insane. Who would do that? Yeah. It's designed around a one. It's actually, wait, you know what? I misspoke. It's a 150.
Oh.
But it's designed around a 140, so we're doing different size forks for different sizes. So the small and extra small are 130, medium and large 140, and the XL 150.
All 29 wheel?
All 29 wheel.
Okay. And so is this one of your samples right here?
This one I made, so this is sort of a geometry prototype.
Okay.
We have... These we're expecting to get around February, so we're starting on tooling for some cast things like yokes and drop reports and stuff like that.
Anything interesting to note other than the varying fork lengths per model?
It's kind of like a mid-school geometry. You know, we went full PBD for a minute and found...
You didn't like that.
Not
once you're in the Bay Area, I think you might change your mind.
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, I think... So many good lessons from that geometry that's like played into the gravel bike design as well. one thing I think I realized with the custom work is that's important to deliver people is that they, in addition to wanting something cool and capable that makes them feel good, they want something familiar.
Familiarity is one of the most important things.
Yeah, and so this is a bike that I think, it's kind of always been my thing. Like, the gravel bikes were my way to, like, push roadies onto dirt. And so, kind of with the mountain bike, too, this is a way to nudge people towards that new school geometry, but still provide something that we find, yeah, familiar, still provides experience of...
Right.
That nostalgic experience of riding a bike.
You know, I see your face light up a bit more when you're talking about a mountain bike.
Oh, yeah. I'm a mountain bike guy for sure. Yeah. I mean, gravel bikes are so fun, but there's nothing more fun than mountain biking.
Right. When you're doing it in the right place at the right time, it's cool.
Yeah. I think it's always fun.
Yeah.
Trails are fun. Being in the woods is fun.
Yeah. What CAD are you using at your in your office?
Fusion.
Your Fusion 360? Mm-hmm. Anything cool you've done with it lately that you might have learned or kind of new approaches that you're thinking about when you're at your CAD station?
CAD stuff. I've been using some more of the surfacing stuff in there for some 3D. I've been doing some 3D print stuff for the custom things, and I did a lot of that when I was doing plastic stuff. In Creo is sort of, which is, I really like how that does the surfacing you can do in Creo, and it's been a bit of a jump to learn how to do it in Fusion. It's not as intuitive, I think, or not as, it's harder to control, I found. I don't know if you've used that.
I'm not a user of either of those programs, really. Fusion, you know, I'm a SolidWorks guy, so I look at Fusion and I'm like, get out of town, right? And then Creo, I just have never had the opportunity recently. I mean, back in the day with PTC, that was around, but it wasn't really available then. And things have just changed, but I just haven't gotten a chance. But, I mean, I'm dealing a lot more with surfaces these days because of 3D printing. The tool set changes, and the methodologies change.
You can do super cool shapes.
Yeah.
And the surfacing stuff is so... Yeah, I mean, it's so fun to be able to do organic stuff. Like, might as well.
Yeah, you might as well, but I like keeping things parametric, and organic and parametric can get hard.
Well, that's why Creo was sweet. Creo is really good at doing parametric surfacing, and I haven't quite figured out how to do that in Fusion yet, but I've been messing around with, you can make cool shapes for sure, but yeah, Creo gave you so much control.
Is that sub-D on Creo?
I'm not sure what that is.
Sub-D's a surface modeling methodology. Not methodology. It's built into the tool, but it's called subdivision. And some of the more advanced, I think Rhino will have it in some of the real surfacing type packages, but it's far more controllable than like NURBS or some other surface environments. And I can't wait to get on sub-D for stuff. But SolidWorks hasn't really done anything with it other than their online shit, not their standalone. And then also, I don't believe it's parametric yet. And it's like, no, I want it, if I'm doing sub-D in SolidWorks, I want it to be parametrized and all that.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part about the Fusion yeah. stuff. It's pretty hard to make it parametric.
Oh, is that what you find in general or with surfacing?
Oh, no. Actually, I kind of like Fusion because it reminds me of Creo a lot, especially with, like, the master modeling I'll do. It's really easy to, you know, link up a bunch of different drawings and then to piece out parts. So if you wanted to, like, draw a whole bike frame and then, you know, you make a file for your chainstay yoke and your chainstay and your seat stay, it's, like, it's really nice for... And then having a master model where you can, you know...
I just switched to a master part model methodology for my entire bike frame stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's... You know, I've used several different methodologies. We'll see how beneficial this one is compared to the others. But, yeah, I'm using master part now, and it's pretty interesting.
That was, like, the coolest thing I learned at my engineering job, which actually the guy I worked for is around Jeff Wyatt, who designed all the Pursuit bikes.
Oh, cool.
We'd have a fun time talking to him. He's done some really cool stuff. Really good at that. That's kind of his whole expertise in
pulling surfaces.
Yeah, and I learned a lot working for him.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
I will do that. Okay, well, thanks a lot. I'm excited for what's coming up for you. I can't wait to refer to, like, you in the same context as specialized in track?
We'll see. Thanks,
all right,
Peter.
Bye. Bye.